Okay. Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning to those of you on the West Coast or up in Alaska. Welcome to this Implant Graphics Magazine webinar on building workflow for the implant print shop. It's sponsored by Canon today. My name is Noel Ward. I'm the managing director of Brimstone Hill Associates, and I'll be moderating the panel today. In a few minutes, you'll be hearing from a couple of my colleagues here, a couple of speakers, Dave Douglas and Julie Versteeg, a couple of implant veterans who will tell you about their shops and how they've met some of the challenges that they've faced. But let's get a little bit of housekeeping out of the way first. Make it a little easier for everyone to keep track of things. If you have any technical difficulties, let us know by hitting the Q&A or the box by clicking the help widget below. Quick tip, any problems like loss of sound or in the slides can often be fixed by a quick refresh of your browser, whether you're on a Mac or PC, you know how to do that, and be able to do a refresh. You'll be able to ask questions. You can put questions using the Q&A box below. And you can check what the console does. Click on the tips for attendees to get some other information. Go back a bit. Anyway. If you have technical difficulties, hopefully you won't have any. We had a couple of glitches when we started, and we think we'll iron them all out. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers you have in your computer so you can utilize all the bells and whistles on this console, and be sure to do that. Click on attendees tips. So let me introduce the speakers. We're going to have Dave Douglas. He's Director of Printing and Postal Services at Springfield College in Springfield, Mass. And Julie Versteeg, she's a Senior Graphics Designer at Musco Sports Lighting in Oskaloosa, Iowa. And as I said, I'm Noel Ward from Brimstone Hill. So we're going to cover a lot of ground today, and we're going to talk about implant printing and some of the challenges you face when you're doing implant printing. There's a lot of stuff that you have to you're faced with, as most of you know, as implant managers. So, get my slides under here, I'm sorry. It can be hard, as you know, being an implant print shop. You're often restricted in the amount of real estate you have, the amount of floor space you have. A lot of times you're stuck in the basement or off in the corner of your facility, and you don't have the latitude that you might have in a commercial print shop to expand your facility easily. The tight quarters that most print shops are in tends to hamper your efficiency. Very often the implants I've been in, the equipment's much closer together than you'd find it in a lot of commercial shops. You have to move around a lot more carefully. You can't always move documents from one place to another as efficiently as you would like to do. And very often you also have tight budgets. You're restricted in many more ways than a commercial shop is in the amount of money you have to spend, because you have to go to somebody else to say, hey, can I spend this money? We need to buy this piece of equipment. We need to do this. We need to adjust the way we're doing things. And you have to justify all that. And it's often hard to do. A lot of print shops that are implants, they're faced with this challenge of saying, I need this new piece of equipment, or I need to be able to develop this new way of working so we can be more efficient. But you have to justify that upstream in your company. And it's challenging for a lot of implants to do that. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about today, because it's a fact of life in implants, and it makes it hard for everybody. There's other implant challenges. Every shop that I've been in has older equipment than a similar commercial shop would be. The older equipment comes with a lot of things. You know how it works. Sometimes it can be pretty reliable. It just sits there and does its job as you're expecting it to. But in often cases, it also can be less reliable. It can also limit the amount of flexibility it's able to offer you. And that means you're limited in how fast you can put jobs through your shop, limits the kind of jobs you can take in very often. You don't have a piece of equipment that will let you do something that you'd like to be able to do or that your customers are needing. And that means, because of the older equipment that's less reliable and less flexible, and because of the general space you have to work in, that limited work area that many shops have, you have a lot more workarounds, different ways of doing things that are unique to your shop that might not be common anywhere else. You've figured out how to make something work, and that works really well for you, but it's not necessarily the most efficient way to do things. And because you're doing something a little differently, when you bring some new people in, you have to train them and you have to staff differently than you might otherwise if you were in a commercial shop or a shop that simply had more space, a bigger, fancier, nicer implant. And the other challenges you get because of these things are you very often have a bunch of manual processes. There's extra handling and movement of all the documents you're producing. The throughput of the documents through your shop tends to slow down because you're doing more things manually. You're having to do things that maybe are exception processing or just workarounds that aren't the most efficient way to do things. And every one of these times you touch a document, it has a cost attached to it. It can be a cost that's in dollars. It can be a cost in efficiency, a cost in labor time. But these costs all increase the what you have to have is really your overhead for your business, your operating costs. So we need to be looking at ways around those, which is one of the things we'll be talking about today. Now, there's other challenges. One of the things that I find when I talk to a lot of implant managers is they really don't get the respect they deserve. The people who are further upstream in their company, whether it's your customers, whether it's management of a company, they don't always think of printing as something as being as important as it really is to their organization. And as an extension of that, the print shop is an afterthought. It's not something they really want to pay a lot of attention to. And the other thing that happens in many shops is that a lot of jobs that they could do go outside. They go down the street to some commercial shop. It might be a quick printer. It might be one of the chain franchises. It could be any small to medium-sized commercial outfit down the road. And those jobs are going out maybe because you can't do them, or maybe because the perception is you can't do them, or you're going to cost too much. Whatever the excuse might be for your customer not sending you those jobs, it's something you're faced with. In some cases, these are jobs that you could do with your equipment, with the equipment you have, but your customers and your company don't necessarily know that you can do it. Or it might be things you can't do because you don't have the right equipment. There's some jobs that you could absolutely do every bit of it, or you could do a part of it, and you could farm out part of it and have it be a more efficient result for your customers. And you could, in some cases, if the job went through your shop, it could be done outside at a lower cost because you can develop a better relationship with an outside customer than the people who in your company might be able to do. And there's other jobs that go out the door that you don't even know about. And the other thing you worry about is you worry about being phased out. In the back of the minds of many print shop operators is there an outside shop down the road who's been talking to my CFO who's saying, well, gee whiz, you know, we can print all these documents that you need in your company, and you don't really need an implant shop because we can do it more efficiently, we can do it faster, we can do it cheaper, whatever his excuse might be. There's maybe someone in your CFO's ear trying to tell you these things, and you have to be worried about that because it's a fact of life. There's print shops, implant print shops, that go out of business that are closed all the time. So one of the things you first think of is, can I do more with some different equipment? Well, what's the right equipment? That's a real challenge. I mean, you go to a big print show, you go to something like Graph Expo, and you look at all the equipment there and you think, oh, man, this is great. I could do this, I could do that, I could do this other thing, I could add this new capability. Well, that's great, except now you have to look at the price of that stuff and you're going to have to start getting permission to buy that. You have to justify why that you need this particular piece of equipment for your shop. So you're going to have a budget battle. The implant guys I've been talking to lately are saying, well, we have to lay out this plan. We have to justify the price of that machine. We have to show how we're going to get a real ROI on that within a pretty narrow time frame, which isn't always easy to do. And I talked to one guy about 6-7 months ago who said it was like putting together a business plan so he could buy a new printer. And it was probably a couple $100,000 machine, so you can understand why the management wants to make sure they're getting their money's worth out of that. But he said it was much more work to put it together than he had ever experienced, and he had to go back 2 or 3 times to be able to justify all the cost of the thing, which is understandable from the management point of view. But at the same time, it's a budget battle you have to fight, and anyone who's been running a print implant for a while is probably pretty familiar with how to do this. But, you know, it's a good way to learn about other ways of doing it by listening to what other people's experiences are doing that. And when you do buy a new piece of equipment, you're still fitting it into that same footprint of your shop. You're still going in there and saying, okay, how am I going to fit this 18, 20, 25-foot-long machine into this space that really doesn't have room for it? Because it's often not a case of take the old one out and put the new one in. The new one's different shape. It's a different size. You have to work it differently. So you're still up faced with those space restrictions. So that's another thing we need to be thinking about. So one of the other things you have to work with then, maybe you can't buy some new equipment, or maybe you can, but you also have to do more with what you have. That's reduce your bottlenecks. Find the places in your shop where things aren't working as smoothly as they could, where work is moving along nice and smoothly, and all of a sudden it comes to a screeching halt or really slows down. How do you work around that? Those are the things we'll be talking about today. Another thing that's very important is what is out there in your shop? What are the services and capabilities you offer that add value for your customers? Because those are the things that are going to make customers in your company keep coming back to you. You have to be thinking about those, and we'll be talking about that today. And then for many shops, something that's becoming common in commercial shops is automation, where a job comes in and is basically almost untouched by anybody until it comes out the other end of a printer or a finishing device. That kind of automation comes in a lot of different flavors and can be staged up really well. But being able to adopt that in your implant is an important way to do things. But as you look at those kind of things, what capabilities make sense? Do you want to have electronic submission? Do you want to have electronic job ticketing? Is inline finishing the right thing for you, or do you have a really efficient nearline or offline finishing operation that still does the job for you really well and in many cases might be perfectly ideal for your situation? And as you look at all the new hardware at a print show, the other thing that takes up the floor space at a print show is the software booths, and there's lots of software options that can really make a difference in print operations these days. So you're looking at selecting new equipment, selling management and the advantages, and then justifying those costs and also looking at software, because the software isn't necessarily inexpensive, but it can really add a lot of value to your operation. So we're going to talk to a couple people today about some of this. And our first speaker is Julie Versteeg. She's a senior graphic designer at Mundo Sports Lighting in Oskaloosa, Iowa. And then we're going to have Dave Douglas. He's director of printing and postal services at Springfield College, Springfield, Mass. And Julie, we're going to start off with you. And you're going to tell us about some of the challenges you've been facing there at Musco. And Dave's going to jump in and talk about Springfield. And then we're going to have some time for Q&A at the back end. So if anyone listening, you want to have some questions, you use the Q&A buttons to make it all happen, and we'll be fielding those at the back end. So take a listen to what Julie and Dave have to say.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. My name is Julie Versteeg. I'm a senior graphic designer with Musco Sports Lighting in Oskaloosa. I have about 20 years of experience in corporate graphic design, and I've been with Musco for about 8 years now. I will show you this picture, this next picture. This is our corporate headquarters. Musco has about 1,100 employees worldwide. We have about 400 of those in Oskaloosa, Iowa. Oskaloosa is a town of about 10,000 people, so Musco is a major employer in the town. We own several properties around town, and there are different reasons for that, but when you talk about space being a premium, that's definitely true for us. This is the corporate headquarters. We have the corner office on the second floor. There is where the company president, Joe, sits, and his wife is the head of our marketing department, and I'm in the marketing department. And the conversation around here goes that, well, Joe has the corner office. He's not giving that up. If he doesn't move, his wife, Jeannie, won't move. And if she doesn't move, then marketing's not moving. So there's been a lot of discussion about building a larger building or moving facilities. And the bottom line is that Musco is very committed to helping our community grow and keeping a lot of people downtown to help support the local economy. So we have kind of a whole city block here that our headquarters takes up. The part that you see here is the old Montgomery Ward building. And on the left of that image is actually an old Chinese restaurant and an old grocery store. And our creative headquarters, so to say, is in the grocery part. So we are in an old Fairway grocery store building, and it's all connected, so it's a little bit like making it through a maze when you walk through the building. We had some challenges when I initially joined the company about 8 years ago. We had a very nice old Canon printer, and it plugged along nicely. As Noel mentioned, it worked pretty well, but it was very slow. We knew there were a lot of things on the market that were faster, and we definitely needed faster. So I helped buy a new machine. We were happy with the Canon, but of course, rather than go with the Canon, we went with another brand, and soon realized we wished we hadn't done that. The newer unit was constantly broken down. the repair we were getting, the service we were getting for repair was from a company that was sending somebody from 2 and 3 hours away to repair. They would come down and not have the parts they needed. When the printer was down, we didn't have a backup printer, so we could be down for a week at a time and have nowhere else to go to get materials printed. We're in a fairly small town, and we have a few businesses around in our immediate area that can help with printing needs, but nothing really on the level we needed, nothing of the quality we needed, and they certainly couldn't turn it around at the speed we needed. We do have some commercial printers that are only about a 20-minute drive, but that wasn't the most practical solution either. Musco, we sell sports lighting, and we like to use sports metaphors for everything we do around here. We talk about having pop-up projects. Somebody hits up a fly ball, you have the opportunity to catch it, we have to be there to catch it. So we have a lot of what we call pop-up projects. That means we get a phone call that we have 10 people who are jumping on the corporate jet and flying to Russia to meet with the Olympic Committee in Russia in Sochi, where they're going to hold the Olympics, and they need 100 copies of this, this, and this, and they're leaving in 3 hours, and they just figured this out. So we have a lot of pop-up opportunities. We're a company that likes to be able to respond quickly, so we needed the ability to do that, and the old printer wasn't offering us that. We also have a steady flow of local projects. Any of the local organizations we support with either time or money, that could be the United Way, it could be the local theater, any of those we support financially, we also support with marketing materials, and we do a lot of printing for them. So we're doing posters and programs and direct mail pieces for all of those organizations. There's a steady flow of a lot of different type of projects coming in there. And all of these projects take professional quality print, and most of the time people need it quickly. We live in a world where people constantly expect the time frame for when they can get things back to shrink. You know, I can hit print on my printer at my desk and get it. Why can't you do that? And they just send me a Microsoft Publisher file and need 300 copies within 30 minutes, and that's not always possible. So we find we have to create nicer-looking pieces in less and less time all the time. We also found with our old printer we were stranding our vendor relationships because we tend to walk in with our hair on fire because we have a lot of opportunities and a lot of things pop up at the last minute. We're constantly calling our vendors and asking, hey, can you print 300 copies of this 28-pound, 28-page booklet, saddle stitch it and have it to us in 15 minutes? And, you know, they're very good about that, but we want to build positive relationships with them and support them so they support us. And when we're always walking in last minute with projects like that, it starts to strain those relationships. So we wanted to be able to have some capabilities in-house to turn around the quick print jobs so we weren't always straining the major vendors we worked with. Because we didn't have a backup printer and because we really only had one nice printer in the building, we found that we were creating a bottleneck. We need to run 300 copies of these installation instructions in Spanish. We're going to run those, and it's so slow that it takes up the printer for hours at a time. And everybody else who just needs one copy of a graph for a meeting they have in 15 minutes can't get through because we're printing. So we found that we were creating bottlenecks and really making everyone unhappy with our department because we were monopolizing the printer all the time, which was in our area, but it was shared by a lot of departments. So that was another reason we really needed a backup printer, was because of the number of people using the printers. So when we looked at what our next piece of equipment would be, we knew, number one, we wanted to go back to a Canon because we'd been very happy with the quality we had from our old Canon. It was very reliable. We could get it repaired. So we knew we wanted to look at Canon. We needed a unit that was faster than 50 pages per minute, which is what the old unit could do. If we'd had, you know, the same speed, it would have been okay, but if possible, we knew we were always waiting on things, and so faster is always better. We needed booklet finishing capabilities if we could have those in line. Space is at a premium. We don't have a lot of space to set things out on tables and assemble things. We need things quickly, so we wanted booklet finishing capabilities. We had flatbed scanners, but they weren't the best quality, so we were looking to see if we could incorporate high-quality document scanning into the printing equipment so that we could just consolidate those into one piece of machinery. We wanted to be able to print larger stock. We could print up to 12-by-18-inch with the old machine. We wanted to do 12-by-18-inch bleed and possibly 13-by-19-inch. And along those lines, we also wanted to handle heavier stock for things like posters for the local theater and direct mail postcards for all these local organizations. We needed to be able to feed heavier stock through the printer without choking it. We wanted a large capacity tray because of the number of booklets we're putting together, and trays for multiple paper sizes. We produce a lot of literature in-house. We may produce installation instructions for our product in English, and then we anglicize it for use in the United Kingdom and Ireland and create those as A4 documents. Then we translate those to Spanish and to Quebecois, to the French that they use in Canada. We translate them to Chinese and Korean and sometimes also Portuguese and Croatian. So some of those are on the same paper size we use. Some of those are A3 and A4 size booklets or pages. And we didn't want to always be trading paper out, refilling paper drawers. So we have six different paper drawers to hold a variety of stocks, and we always have some international paper in there as well. And again, we wanted a backup printer. We were replacing one model. We knew somehow we had to replace it with two models, so we had the backup there for when things break down or when we just need a passing gear. This is just a quick picture of Cube World. I know a lot of you live in Cube World where I live, and that's our creative services department. The next room over is where our printing equipment is housed. We used to sit right by the printer, and they moved us around about a year ago, so it's in the next room. You see a computer there in the middle, and that computer is hooked to both of the printers we have because we did get two devices. We use a Fiery Rip, but they're both connected through one computer, which makes it very convenient. The big printer you see there is, we call her Big Bertha. Big Bertha is a Canon Image Press C7000, again attached to the Fiery Rip. We had to give her a nickname because she was so big. People kept coming through and looking at the machine and asking if we could bake pizzas or make gelato with the printer. So we had to give her a nickname. She was big enough. So she's the big electronic transmogrifying heat-producing apparatus. You can see the extra paper trays we have there, the scanning document scanner with a feeder on top, and then at the very end is a booklet finisher. When we talk about having tight space, this was a floor model we purchased. We measured very carefully, made sure everything was going to fit, made sure we had the three-phase power we needed, and when we had it delivered, we had added on the booklet finishing capabilities and quickly realized it's too big. We didn't include those measurements when we measured the unit that was on the floor. So it does block a part of a door, and we had to get special permission from our facilities managers to do that. We have two other doors to this same room. So we were able to kind of get around that that safety standard, but it was a little bigger than we expected when we got it. The large printer here uses the same color engine as the smaller printer, so the color we're getting off the two units is very consistent. If we have to run both for some reason, the pieces we get off of both these machines are very similar as far as color quality. They also have the same document scanner, the same exact same setup, so people can come in and use those and know how to use either one of those when they're printing, and the interface is pretty simple on those. This is Mini Me. That's the smaller printer we got. It's a backup for our large runs, but we also call it the printer for everyone else. This is a Canon Image Press C1, and it can print about 11 pages a minute. The larger printer can simplex 70 pages a minute, 70 pages a minute. Full color, and it can duplex 64 pages a minute, so there's quite a bit of difference in speed. This smaller printer is perfect for everyone else, perfect for all the, I would say, non-designers. They're doing 10 copies. They're doing a chart. It's one-sided. This machine will duplex, but usually the needs that most of the other internal customers have are very simple. They just want it to look good. They want it to look like it did on their screen. I need to print something quickly. So this printer is available so that when the large printer is running a booklet run of 3,000 copies, people can still print, and they can print to this smaller printer. And it's also a backup in a pinch for us when we need it. By having both of these printers available, we've really made it possible for a lot more people to access all of our literature. We have hundreds of files. We're doing them in seven languages. You can imagine how many documents that amounts to. So when we finish printing a job, we can actually archive it in the RIP. All of the job options are saved there. It's ready to go. If somebody needs to print copies of it, they don't have to have a Macintosh or a PC that have all the fonts on it. They don't have to have InDesign. They don't have to have Illustrator. They can walk right up to this printer in one simple window and right-click and send jobs and go to town. So not only do people not always have to ask me when they need something printed, but basically anybody in our marketing department can run up, and if somebody has a need, needs something turned around quickly, they can do it directly from the RIP. So that's been a wonderful improvement in efficiency for us. We now have a turnaround time of hours versus days. If I need to print 3,000 copies of something, I can start that running right away. I don't have to collect it for output and submit it and view a proof and approve the proof and wait for them to get it on their schedule. Even with some of the local printers who are really willing to just bend over backwards for us, it's still a number of days to get things turned around, generally speaking. And when we need something fast, we're able to meet those needs internally. We do have a cost savings with these printers internally. I'll give you an example. If I have an 8-page full-color saddle stitch booklet and I need 1,000 copies of that, if I look at my in-house cost, which would include paper, toner, services, things like that, we consider that our cost in-house would be 42 cents each for an 8-page booklet. And that's versus $1.77 each from a local printer. So altogether, that's about $420 versus $1,700. That's a savings of almost $1,300. So yes, this printer was a large investment, but we're able to do our job, do it more quickly, allow more people to help with the job, and the cost savings per project is quite easy to prove to the bean counters. So we really have noticed a lot of cost savings with the equipment. We also have a culture of change, of constant change. Our products are constantly improving. Our statistics and technical information is constantly changing. People are constantly changing their minds or adding pages or taking pages out. And if we get those things printed commercially, we were throwing away just hundreds of thousands of pages every year and wasting resources and time and paper and money. We find with this we can do a lot more just-in-time printing. We can print smaller runs, just what people need for a short period of time. We can reprint very quickly with less cost. And if we do have to recycle, we aren't throwing so much away and losing so much on those copies we have to recycle. So there's a far less waste involved now for us. And no, that's all I have. So I think we're ready for Dave now.
Hello. Hi. This is Dave. Dave Douglas. I've been employed at Springfield College for 40 years. I'm currently the Director of Printing and Postal Services here. I put these slides together. Our mission, our biggest mission, is to provide excellent customer service to all our customers. That includes the administration, the faculty, the students, others. We have a main college campus that has about 5,000 students, and then we also have 10 satellite campuses that are all over the country, from California to Texas to Florida. And we service most of those locations. The satellites, we don't do their day-to-day copying. We mostly take care of their letterhead and envelope and business cards. Our biggest thing is customer service. That is what's kept us going here. I can't stress enough how important customer service is to the success of our operation. I tell people all the time that work in our department that we can't be the grumpy, overworked people in the basement that nobody wants to talk to. If our customers aren't comfortable coming to us, they will eventually take their work somewhere else. And those of you out there that also work at colleges know that in the higher ed, it's unique because of the faculty. It's like working somewhere where you have 500 vice presidents. Each one feels they're the most important person in the world, and their work has to take precedence over everyone else's. And then my second bullet point was to produce as much printing in-house as possible while still meeting deadlines and maintaining quality. And how I've created a niche for us is that we take only work that we can do well and meet deadlines, and that
I never try to take anything that's outside the capabilities of my machine. I send it to a vendor that can do it. If our equipment can't handle something, it slows everything down. It does create a bottleneck, and we're not able to do other people's jobs because all our efforts are concentrated on doing this one. For an example, if it takes you all day to break down a machine to run 1,000 envelopes, send it to someone with an envelope press. And unless that's the only thing you have to do that day, your time can be better spent doing something else. Our facilities. We have 3,500 square feet in a basement of a building. We're maxed out on space where we are now. Space has to be a consideration in each new equipment purchase we attempt. There's little opportunity for expansion in our present facility. Before I place a new piece of equipment, I have to decide what current piece of equipment I can live without. Okay. Applications. We do course material. We do variable data mailings, marketing materials. Our black ink, we do syllabi, course packs, lab manuals, exams, handouts, forms. Color, we do a lot of marketing materials, programs, announcements, postcards. And then our large format, we have two poster printers, two Canon 8000s that we do posters on, and posters have become a significant part of our offerings. We average about 12 posters a day on our large format machines. The majority of our work is submitted as electronic files sent through email. And the remainder is electronic files brought to us either on flash drives, or we have some stuff we still reproduce some hard copies. Here's a list of the equipment that I have on campus. We've got a couple large production color machines, the Canon 7010 VP and the 6010 VP, which are calibrated so that the colors match. Both have inline saddle stitch and three-sided trimming. I also have got a couple of mid-range production machines that we have here in the print shop. Also on top of all this stuff I've listed, I have 50 copy machines on campus, office copiers that I'm responsible for. Let's see. Our keys to success. It's been our outstanding reputation for services. With this reputation, our department has become a valuable asset to the college. It took us a while to get here, but after establishing this reputation, it's been very easy for us, or for me, to get support from the administration. Now the powers that be are confident in our abilities and trust my decisions for equipment purchases and improvements. Here now, I think we've made a turnaround where our purchases, our new equipment are looked at as assets to the college and not liabilities, which is often the case in most other service departments. Developing and meeting the needs of the marketing department was another bullet point, this was by far the toughest thing I've tackled. It's been convincing our marketing department to choose our implant over the commercial printers they've been using for years. For years, we were a black and white shop banging out handouts and forms. 7 or 8 years ago, things began to change. Faculty began putting more things online. A lot of our forms and billing was heading online. Our impressions began to dip. So I knew if we were to survive, we had to do something different. So I began to transition to color with a small 50-copy-a-minute office machine. It was a start, but it wasn't the quality that our marketing department required. After having that machine for a couple years, we made the jump to the Canon 7000. It took a couple of years for us to build the volume, but with this we were able to compete with the products we had been buying from commercial printers. And then 2 years ago now, probably 2010, we upgraded the 7000 to the 7010 VP and added the 6010 to handle the additional volume. When we started with the first 7000, we were doing one marketing job a month. Now we do at least three a day. Once we began doing their work regularly, it still took at least a year to gain their confidence. They were hesitant to drop the commercial printing for a while till we could prove to them that we could do things just as well as the commercial printers they were dealing with now. And then lastly was me to develop a plan for the future. A large portion of my time is spent staring into my crystal ball. I'm constantly introducing new solutions and bouncing ideas off the marketing staff to determine the direction this department should be headed. In order to meet the future demands of our customers, we have to have the technology and support already in place when the need arises. We can't be behind the eight ball on that, or else they'll move on to somebody who has the technology already. It's my job here has always been, I've always felt that the future of this department and the jobs of the people who work here depend on my keeping Springfield College Printing and Postal Services viable. We're in direct competition, and our existence is threatened by commercial printers and facilities management companies every day. That will conclude that. Thanks for listening. I'll be glad to elaborate on anything I touched on or answer any questions you may have.
Okay, that was great, Dave. Real good coverage of all your
doing
there.
I tried to blow through it pretty quickly.
No, that was terrific. No, we have plenty of time here, and we can have a good conversation now. Since you just finished, I'm going to start with you because you said some interesting things. You're doing 12 posters a day. That's terrific. Some implants do posters. I've been in some schools that do posters. I've been in some regular implants for companies that do them, but it's not a thing that all of them have. How did you get that part of your business started?
It took a long time, but we do some really nice stuff, and what has happened is a lot of our programs now, our graduate programs, include poster presentations. So students take their research projects and create a poster. They do a presentation on their project, display the poster. They go to conferences with posters. Our ResLife staff uses us a lot to advertise activities and events along with our student activities also. So it's taken, you know, a few years to build it up, but because of the cost, it was a little slow, but now I'll tell you, it's really become a pretty big part of our business.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Dave. I think internally, Musco used to do posters for a local theater mainly, and we could do up to the 12 by 18 inch size or 11 by 17, and we kind of stole an old plotter that was in storage that nobody was using. It was an old one from engineering they'd replaced. They just never took the time to get rid of it, and we had borrowed that and tried to get it going to see if we could do some larger ones, and then actually had the opportunity to test out an 8100 plotter, Canon 8100,
right.
And the results were just so wonderful we would never let them take it back once the powers that be saw what we could do and how quickly we could do it and how nice the pictures look coming off of it. And once people in town started finding out that we had done those posters for the theater, then a lot of the organizations we worked with came to us for promotion for different things. And it may only be three or four posters. You know, we're not a town that large, so they put
right.
one up at the local coffee shop and one at the theater. But I think as people find out you have those capabilities, then suddenly you become kind of the local experts for that kind of stuff.
So you're seeing, Julie, you're seeing some companies outside of Musco coming to you because of your poster capability. They're saying, hey, gee, can you do these dozen posters for our organization?
Yes, and actually, I mean, it's mainly the ones, like I mentioned earlier, that we're already supporting financially that we're doing work for, but we do a lot for the college in town. We're doing a lot for the schools when they need help. We really could support a nice little design shop in town. We've always said we don't want to be our own printers. We were a little wary of getting the production level machine because we didn't want to become our own printers. We're not in the business of printing. We're in the business of selling lights. But we did it out of necessity because nobody in town was willing to invest in equipment, or, you know, they might be somebody older who has a business who doesn't have any children interested in taking it over, and they're not ready to change their capabilities. And so we really did it kind of out of necessity, and we've become a little print shop in a sense for some of the local businesses.
That's something that some implants are able to do, and I suspect that some of the audience is having the same experience. They're often wondering, gee, how can I sell some of my services outside? Because it helps them justify their existence more internally, but it also can give them a revenue stream that they wouldn't get otherwise. So it's a positive thing. I remember the first company I worked in where we had an implant print shop. That was one of the things they were doing, is trying to bring in some business from outside, and it took them a while to do it, but it was actually something they found was actually pretty lucrative because they had extra capacity on their presses, and they got the word out there, and they started to get business from it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another thing, Dave, that you said, this is interesting. I guess it's the same line as the posters. It took a while to get people's attention, but in the case of your marketing department, it took them a while to buy into what you were doing and what you were able to offer them. How did you go about getting them to say, okay, we got to go down and see Dave for these jobs instead of sending him down the street?
Well, we had to prove to them that we could do the quality work that they were looking for. I mean, initially when we first started in color with a little 50-copy minute machine, that, you know, it just didn't meet their standards. So once we went to the 7,000, we could take their files and turn them into the same documents they were getting from the commercial printers. And as long as we stay in that niche that we've created, that's probably generally 1,000 copies and under, we can compete. In some areas, it's 5,000 copies and under. But if it's 1,000 booklets or something, I can compete with a commercial shop on that. If it goes to web or a lot more booklets, you know, like our view book, which is 30,000 or 40,000. There's no way that I can compete on that. So we kind of stay in our niche, and by showing them that the savings are there, that we can turn it over and meet their deadlines, and give them the same quality they were getting before, we did it. It took a while, but we did it.
Now, some marketing departments at colleges and universities are using digital printing to personalize some of the documents they send out to prospective students. It's not widespread yet. Do you see something like that happening at Springfield, or are you doing that now?
We do some of that now. We don't do as much as I'd like, but we do postcards that are not only addressed, but they're personalized in the greeting, and in some cases on the front there's a, you know, thanks for coming to visit us, Julie, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, those are often pretty effective when schools are doing them. And I find some of the schools that are doing it, they are doing it with their implant. Other ones are going outside someplace. But it's definitely an effective thing for schools to do. And I know there's some people from college, university implants in the audience. So it would be interesting to hear from them offline to what they're doing, what their experience is with that. Julie, one of the things you said that was kind of interesting was the cost of revisions has really been a big benefit for you. I imagine that Ellis is probably extended, I guess, because of the number of different languages you have to produce your documents in. Talk to us a little bit about that savings and how that works for your company.
Well, it's not just the number of documents we're producing, but we do have just kind of constant R&D going on. It's not like cars where they come out with the 2013 model and that's it. When our engineers come up with something that they think is going to benefit the customer, they want to take it at live right away and start building it that way. So the product itself changes constantly. and we may know there's a product change coming down the line and be conscious of that and say, well, we're only going to print 200 of these because we think the new product's going to be available in 2 months, and we're only going to print 50 of each of these translations, and then we'll quickly update what we need to for the new piece and make sure it's current, and then we'll print larger quantities of it then. So it's all the savings, as I mentioned, times seven, because we're not throwing away all those languages, and it's also just, you know, we don't have to have the space to store all those either. You know, we aren't storing huge quantities. We may print 20,000 copies of something for domestic use and only 100 for international for a year's worth of material, and we're just able to get by with much less storage space, so there's a cost savings there. We aren't going through all the paper. We don't have to have somebody to manage all of that. We aren't constantly, you know, sending stuff out to the printers, and there's just, I guess, a cost benefit in several ways there.
Well, sure. None of this stuff becomes really, very little becomes obsolete because you only print as much as you need.
Right.
So that works out real well. Now, one of the things you said was that you were able to justify a lot of the cost savings you were seeing with the 7,000. Your argument to the bean counter. So did you realize you were going to see the kind of savings in terms of the per piece price of a booklet that you are seeing, or was that something you hoped for, or did you really figure on that up front?
I had hoped there would be some. I thought, you know, boy, if we're really lucky, it'll cost us half, and the savings has been so much greater. And, you know, obviously, I went to the bean counters and said, how do you want me to look at cost savings for this? Do you want me to factor in my time and building costs and things like that? And they didn't. It's purely based on kind of a materials cost and service contracts and things like that. But it's just been so much per piece, we really had to start looking at where we want to draw the line, because we don't have the space to do a lot of big runs. We initially said, okay, if anything's 3,000 pieces or under, we'll do it in-house. Beyond that, we'll send it out, just because we don't have room to have that many boxes sitting around and have somebody to constantly stand there all day just, you know, packaging things up. And so we kind of had to – it was hard. We get profit sharing from the company, and everybody's looking at that bottom line, and everybody's looking at the big printer saying, wow, shouldn't that be running 24/7? And so we run it as much as we can, but we had to kind of identify where we thought our biggest cost savings were. We saw those numbers much more quickly than we thought we would. We actually had the bean counters come to us at the end of the year and say, have you guys forgotten to turn in some things, because you're sending far less on printing this year? And we kind of started digging around and really looking at the numbers, said, nope, we just made a good decision. So it was a happy surprise that we could see the cost savings as quickly as we did.
Yeah, that's real nice to see an ROI come around on you like that. That's pretty satisfying, I guess, right?
Yes.
Dave, one of the things you said I thought was real interesting, was great advice to anyone listening to this thing, was you focus on doing what you do really well. I mean, that's terrific advice, and not every shop always pays attention to that kind of thinking, but it really does work. I was glad to hear you say that. Something else that I notice here, both of you have equipment that has inline finishing capabilities. Do you do other finishing offline, or do you just rely on everything to be inline, and what's the benefit for you when you go to inline like that? You can start off.
Okay. We do very little offline. I fold. We have a large right angle folder, and that's probably most of the finishing we do offline now. We have a booklet maker on five of my machines. We have three-sided trimmers, so our booklets are all finished online. The advantage is just it's a finished product when it's done. Take it on the workstation, send it to the machine, it comes out finished, there's no more handling. People can do other things while that job is running. I run our print shop with five full-time people. So it's important that as much be done online as we can. And if there's things that we can't do here that need to be done offline, we have a partnership with a print shop down the street where we bid their services annually, and we use whatever folding or printing or whatever we need with them as extra labor. So it works out well. The only thing I would warn people of your partner or whatever you're using, is make sure that you deal directly with them. You don't let your customers go to them, because before you know it, they'll be back trying to solicit work from the people that you said, oh, just call down the street and talk to the PIP guy or whatever. And then when they don't have time to talk to you, they'll just call him directly, and soon you'll see work going out the door. Very good.
We have booklet finisher. I would have loved to have a perfect bound. You can add a section to the C7000 for perfect binding and for punching, and you can swap out dies so you can pre-punch things for GBC or spiral binding and things like that. We just didn't have the space for that. So I would have loved to added some of those as well. The booklet finishing is just awesome. The booklet finisher trims the leading edge, so you end up with something that's very finished. We can do up to 15 sheets, and it's a 60-page booklet, and it just comes out looking, you know, very finished. We added an older additional trimmer for things like cards, or if we wanted to trim, you know, make a bleed booklet that trimmed on the top and bottom as well. But I saw one of the questions, Noel, on the Q&A section. Somebody asked what monthly volumes are. We probably do anywhere between, it varies by season for us, but we can do anywhere between 20,000 and 40,000 pages in a month. Sometimes we may go way over that. So we're relatively small volume. The printer is not running around the clock, but it's all of the designers. We have four designers, and they're running the print shop as well. So we're printing what we need just in time. And initially had estimated we'd do about 20,000 a month based on our other volumes. And because we had such cost savings and things were running so well, that just went through the roof once we put the 7,000 in.
Okay, good. Good, thank you. A bunch of questions coming in, so I'm going to ask a couple of those, and some of these are kind of short answer. We have Tana from Unum asking, what do you use for color management?
We have an I1 to calibrate the C7000, so it's set up to we can calibrate both printers using the Fiery, the computer that runs the Fiery, and we have an I1 to do that. We don't generally calibrate all of the separate machines, and that's just in part because we have so many machines printing to those printers. We have files coming from so many outside sources for local jobs. The color holds very well on the 7000, even after we calibrate, you know, and compare. It's just holding fairly true unless we're in Iowa. The humidity changes quite a bit. So if there's been a big swing in the weather, we'll notice changes. But in general, we're just calibrating the off-the-glass and the print output on the printers themselves, and we aren't using any special calibration tools on the Macs or the PCs.
What about you, Dave? You have that marketing department breathing down your neck for quality. What do you use for color management?
The same as Julie. We pretty much you know, we check them, each machine, and we have the tech come in and check the quality and the colors periodically, although our operators all know how to recalibrate the machines. We just, and they're pretty good. I mean, we have, our biggest thing is our maroon, which is the Springfield College color, is making sure that 202 maroon is 202.
That's one nice thing.
Always got to got those spot colors, right? Everyone has a headache with at least one spot color where it's got to be perfect.
Well, that's the one that when all the brochures are put together, that color has to look the same on all of them.
Okay.
I know one of the things we did when we initially set up our 7000 was it has the capability to recognize a spot color and always make sure it's coming out, you know, as a certain color. You agree what you want the appearance to be, and they help us set that up initially. So our corporate colors are blue and yellow, so we identified the Pantone colors we use for those, and they helped us set up the machine so when those came through, they'd be very consistent. We've been very happy with that. So.
Okay, great. We have a bunch of questions coming in, so we'll try to get some short answers on some of these so we can get as many of them done as possible. Dave, you said that you're using email rather than electronic submission for a lot of your jobs. Why just email, not a broader electronic process?
Well, we have enough bandwidth to do most of it through email. And the reason I haven't done any web-based stuff was cost. At times I wanted to spend money on other things. I needed to allocate funds to different, you know, getting different equipment. So I've why I look at the web-based products all the time, I still haven't pulled the trigger on one. I don't think they're bad. I don't think there's anything wrong with them. I just think that the only reason we use it is because it doesn't cost us anything to use email right now.
Right, right. Yeah, I've heard that answer before from a lot of different shops. Let's see. How do you manage paper? Do you work with standard paper sizes? Do you cut paper according to job sizes? How do you do that?
We,
either one of you.
Because of the trays and everything, and that why I buy most of my paper in standard sizes. I very rarely buy parent size paper anymore since we've gone to digital. So all of our paper is most of our paper is pre-cut to standard sizes.
Okay.
I would say that's the same for us. We have a little bit of trouble finding suppliers for the international sizes stateside, so we actually work with one of our printers who orders a larger sheet and cuts down to A3 and A4 for us so we can do international booklets. We do trim some. I mentioned we have a trimmer, so a lot of times we'll print things 2 and 4 up and trim them ourselves if we have something that's not standard size. But in general, we keep things as we're designing in the standard sizes just because it's simpler.
Yeah, it's always
less
a lot
handling,
simpler that
so.
Way.
Yeah.
Good question just came in. If you're dealing with email submission, how do you manage billing?
We do it all manually.
Okay.
We fill out a work order and price it as we fill it out and drop it in. I have someone who puts it in on the keyboard and charges it.
Okay. Okay. And you don't yet see that you'd be able to save enough to justify some of the more automated systems yet?
I don't think that there's a lot of savings to be taken from that for the amount of time we spend actually doing work orders.
Okay.
I think that it's pretty time consuming to set it up, though, with all the variables there are in printing with paper weights and sizes and colors and prices changing all the time. It's not an easy setup. That was one of the things that made me hesitate on going to the web base was just looking at how much is involved in setting up the billing portion.
Okay, here's an interesting question. I've heard this one asked in similar kinds of webinars before. Do either of you do any kind of self-promotion of your department and services, any kind of PR that encourages different departments to use your services? This might be more something for Dave than Julie, because Julie's in a smaller company. But what do you do in that respect?
I really don't do that much. I mean, we, again, like I said earlier, we have a very good customer service. But I do go once a year or twice a year to meetings of different groups, whether it's a staff group or the administration group, and do a short little presentation of the new services we offer and what we can do. We had a recent accreditation where we did this, the NEASC accreditation, where they came in and they did a survey of all the services departments on campus, and I'm going to guess there was probably over 20 and on customer service, and we were number one. So that's where I want to stay, because that's the only reason the only way we're going to stay here is if we people are happy with what we do. That's the best, to me, that's the best way of self-promotion right there.
That's good advice all around.
At Musco, we have an orientation process that all new employees go through. So they get kind of a little dog and pony show of each department and their capabilities when they begin. And then every 5 years or so, we have what we call a Seen It All tour, where the employees are invited to tour the facility. We have in Oskaloosa and then another town in Iowa. And a lot of times we'll try to roll out and, you know, pieces that show them our new capabilities. For instance, we can do banner stands internally now with the plotter. We can print banner material on that and buy the hardware ourselves, and we found we can produce banner stands for $50 each instead of $150 each, or $100 each instead of $700, depending on the type of piece you're putting together. So a lot of times we'll put those up as people are coming through on their tour of the facilities so that they're just seeing the types of things we produce as they go through.
Okay,
that's
great,
probably the biggest PR we do.
Okay, great. Thank you, Julie. Thank you, Dave. We are really out of time for today. On behalf of Implant Graphics and Canon, especially Canon, I'd like to thank you all for attending today's webinar. Really appreciate everybody's attendance out there. It looks like there are about 100 people. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. This one will be archived, and you'll be able to go back and look at it again later. Anyway, thank you all very much for attending. We really appreciate you being here, and have a great week, and keep on going. Keep on printing.